Did I answer your question? Was it your question or my question?
I don't know. We had questions going back and forth. So.
Can you sign the release? Just saying, yes, you're here. And it's
okay.
All good.
You can talk to me about something.
Don't read it. Okay. Don't read it. Just sign.
Don't read it. Just sign.
I learned a valuable lesson earlier in my life.
Which was?
Never do what you just did, which is to sign the thing without reading it.
Right.
Because I signed some stuff, and because my dad said, here, sign this. And I said, what is it? He said, don't worry about it. And I signed it. And then when he died, I realized I really should have read that, because I was in deep shit. He didn't intend to totally screw me over, but, you know, because he's my dad.
He did.
Yeah, no. All right, hello, everybody.
Hi. I'm everybody?
No, the audience.
Oh, okay.
The audience.
Got it.
And welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week is playwright, songwriter, performer.
Yeah.
Brenda Varda. You have a lot of A's there, and so I think I just wanted to put an extra A. Did I miss anything? Playwright, songwriter, performer?
I'm sure there's...
Teacher.
I have been teacher. I do composing. I don't know. There's a bunch of things I've done in the past. I've actually written lots of scripts for other things, too. So.
Con artist, flim flammer?
Yeah, I'm hoping. You know, I've got a couple on the line right now that are going to bring you some big bucks.
All right. Flim flamming. It's always good to have aspirations.
Yeah,
we will have some fun with Brenda in just a moment, but first a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is the very funny, we hope, Brenda Varda. You're funny, right?
Sometimes.
I mean, no, people think you're funny.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, no, that's a good place
quirky.
To start. Yeah. So you have this wide-ranging body of work. Some other things, weird performance art things.
Yeah.
Right? You've done some of that?
I've done some weird performance art. I've been a robot. I've rolled in the mud somewhere along the line. And
I'm not a robot.
Or a lot of wigs. You know, it's all good.
I'm not a robot, but I played one on TV.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's right. One of my favorite topics.
Now, I wanted to ask, you mentioned this thing about Mack Wellman a minute ago and the son of Simeli.
Son of Semele.
Semele. I don't even know how to say it. Who is Semele and what the heck is that? I saw another play in this festival like last month.
Oh, you did? Which one?
Yeah. The one that was based on the Chekhov play. Is it right after the Three Sisters or right after the Cherry Orchard?
Oh, I didn't see that one. So you were there at the facility.
I was there at the facility and I said, okay, Son of Semele.
So do you know Semele? Do you know who the Son of Semele is?
I don't know anything.
Dionysus.
Dionysus is the Son
of Semele. Yes. Unless I'm totally wrong. I could be just pulling this out of my ass at the moment, but that I believe it. So that's going into the Dionysian rites and to the beginnings of drama. And so this, you know, that's where it all starts. Yeah.
So Semele?
Semele.
Semele.
I know. We go back and forth. Semele.
Because they're both awkward. Semele sounds like something else. Semele smells like something else.
Smelly, son of Smelly. I'm sure that they've had that problem in the past.
Semele.
Semele.
Semele. Jesus Christ.
I know. It's going to take a while.
They got a marketing problem because I had no idea that is the son. Wait, the son of Semele is Dionysus?
Yes. That's the son. Of Semele is Dionysus.
Is Dionysus, okay.
Or Bacchus if you're going on the other side.
No, let's not get those two confused.
I know.
A big difference.
I know.
Big.
But some people put them together, so that's, they'll go, there's one's Greek, one's not Greek. So that's, it's good.
Oh, and beyond that, I think the main difference between Bacchus and Dionysus is the hangover. Like the Dionysians are, they don't have a hangover. They are ecstatic.
Have you talked to the Dionysians?
Well, they're in the ecstatic moment. The Bacchians just like fall over,
they just drown it.
Yeah, they just throw up and then they
is that the difference between Greece and Rome?
Well, yeah, the Bacchians have a worse hangover. That's basically how it was taught to me. Dionysus, Bacchus, hangover.
Hangover, okay. Yeah.
Anyway.
So it's a great little theater space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there was this thing, you mentioned Mack Wellman. I saw a thing, is this your... the show Reactor that you're working on, or is this
No, Reactor was one I did before in that space, which was sort of an absurdist play with music and a dead rock star scientist playing songs, which is about the competition between nuclear fusion and nuclear fission, and that would nuclear fusion ever become something that would actually exist in society as a source of energy.
When you say it like that, the competition between fusion and fission, I actually see like two college football teams. And with their mascots, and I'm just like wondering what kind of uniforms
that's kind.
They
that's
have.
Kind of. I think that would be an actual. It'll be a metaphor that would work.
Yeah.
It's. I wrote this about 4 years ago, the original version, and the battle to say that nuclear fusion can work is still going on. I have to go back and check on it, because fission makes things go out and explode, and fusion brings them together.
Oh, thank you.
That's all. And so bringing them together was a better thing because it doesn't. So I'm not a scientist. I only play one on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I just found it fascinating that this battle was going on, and it's actually still going on.
So the fission people say we're uniters, not dividers. Or did I get that wrong? The fission. Fusion.
Fusion says together. Uniters,
fusion
not
dividers.
Fusion
comes together. Fission goes out. Fusion, we're uniters, not dividers.
Yeah. Okay. So
this is also not a philosophical conversation.
No, it's not.
It
might be political. It might be scientific. You know, that's
it's probably scientific.
Scientific, but yeah. So this one is a different project. This is called The Offending Gesture, and it's by Mack Wellman. And just so you know, where the play comes from, it's not what the play is about. But during World War II, there was a dog in Finland that was owned by a pharmaceutical guy, and for fun, he taught his dog to do the salute.
The Hitler salute.
Yeah. And then, but the Nazis found out about it, and they didn't like it. That's where the play starts from, but there's no people in the play.
Is it all dogs?
There's a couple of dogs, and there's some cats.
And
but they're not played like dogs or cats. They're played like humans. So it's...
They have to have lines.
It's humans being played by dogs and cats, but they're playing them like humans, so that they're pretending to be humans. Or they are, sort of. So it's... So it's, but
I understand.
I know.
You have to see.
It's just got some great stuff in it.
And that's coming up.
That's opening in March. I believe is it March 10th? Yeah.
Okay.
So.
And is it part of this festival?
No, the festival part is done. No, this
is
an actual run of a new play, directed by Edgar Landa, and produced by Son of Semele. It has a great cast. They're very funny.
Son of Semele, this is why I'm just going to ask one more deconfusing thing.
Okay.
That's the name of the space, not the festival.
Yeah, well, the Son of Semele produces the festival, but it's actually the space. The space has been there for, I don't know, how many years now? 15, 20 years? It's been quite consistent in production. And they usually do things that are slightly over the edge, which is nice.
I like the edge.
Yes, and that would be the place to encounter it.
I learned at some moment that the way to find out where the edge really is to go too far.
Yes.
And most people get, they don't get close to the edge because it's scary. And so they underperform. I'm just saying that's a thing that happens. Maybe not most people, but there's a fear of getting too close. There's a fear of going too far.
And that's true. I mean, it's just like when you go to see stand-ups, there's the ones... I'm not a stand-up, so I can't claim that territory, but I'm sure you've talked
to
a few. I've seen a few stand-ups.
You're qualified to
have
an opinion
about
their world.
About that. But, and also in plays. I mean, I think there's a lot of safe playwriting that doesn't go very far.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of interesting when you try to push things beyond the realm, which was like the Mack Wellman play does, push it beyond the realm.
Right.
So when you're in the audience, your brain has to do some of the gymnastics.
But you like that.
I love the gymnastics. Yes.
You constantly try to go out. You're out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're provoking.
Because otherwise I get bored.
I understand.
It's like blah, blah, blah. I can watch TV.
I understand. Here's a question I just had to ask about your work in the past. Because, I don't want to spend too much time in the past because you're alive now and you're probably going to be alive
years.
Tomorrow.
I got a couple of days left,
But I got to ask this. In 1990, you were on Who's the Boss? And I just wanted to know if there were any embarrassing or traumatic stories that you wanted to relate to us. Anything you needed to get off your chest or, say for the first time that nobody else knows, this is a safe place to do it.
I just have to say that I was a character on Who's the Boss. I was Lizzie. I had even done that voice, I don't think, since 1990.
but I was Tony's girlfriend, yes, for a brief period of time. Actually...
It's only cracking me up because it makes total sense that they would have his girlfriend have that kind of a voice
like this. Right? Yeah. It's true.
So, no.
He couldn't possibly have a girlfriend that was intelligent or sounded intelligent.
No, but it was a great episode. The only thing about it was awfully wonderful about it was that, I had to really think. Jerry Orbach was on it also, one of the guest stars. And it was a flip in time type thing, which I loved. It actually was a fairly sophisticated Mazz episode. I was the girlfriend in the current time, but then it flipped back to the 1940s. And so there was this whole black and white segment that was done. And so I guess I looked like a gal from the 1940s, it looked like.
I see. And that so in that thing was Tony Danza, like Chachi from Happy Days. He played Chachi. Chachi loves Joni.
I'm sure it was something like that. He was a sailor. That's right. I can see the costume now. He was a sailor. He was going to save the world. But actually, there was kind of an innocuous experience, I think, just because, right. You know, there's no dirty stories to tell. But yes, I was.
I just figured I would open the door. Right. You know, sometimes you open the door and something that's been trying to get out kicks it open.
Yeah, thank you. That was good.
Yeah. Here's something else, just randomly, or seemingly random. I don't think anything's random.
No.
So now we're getting on another philosophical topic. One of the things that irks me is that people say, it was totally random.
No.
And I just think, I believe this deeply. I'm not a religious person. Mm-hmm. But I do not believe that anything is actually random. I think it seems random to our small human minds and experience. But I think random is a fiction.
So you think it's all happening for... Not for a reason,
but... I don't
but
think that either.
I was going to make that leap, but that leap's wrong. That's a wrong leap, I know. It's like reason is not connected to non-random.
That's true. There is a third opening. There's more space there. Yeah, that's true. I don't know if things happen for a reason. That's my official position. Yeah. And I don't think we'll ever know if it happens for a reason.
We like to think it does, though.
That's a big problem.
Yeah, right.
Like, if really bad things happen and people can't deal, they say, oh, everything happens for a reason. And it's like an opiate for their, you know, it's a salve.
I got into this whole discussion about when people say, I am so blessed.
Yes, exactly. I mean, like, I really feel the urge. I don't do it. I've never done it. Let's just say I haven't done it yet.
Because you've done the right thing, and that means probably that I'm not blessed, which is, you know, probably true, too, but...
Blessed. You're always blessed. Yeah. Whether good things or bad things happen, I think you're blessed, basically. You know, anyway.
Me personally, but not... You know,
all
we can't of us. God,
either we all yeah, are or no one is.
Is. Yes.
I don't think God plays favorites. That's if there is a God, which I don't know either way.
Right. I think there's a lot of really...
I don't think he or she plays favorites.
So I think there's just a lot of things we just don't know about. That's basically it. And you know what? By the time I die, it's not going to get figured out. That's what I had to say.
Here's the question, started with a question. The other day you were asking for help translating Latin phrases. What the hell was going on?
That's for the offending gesture. Yeah, because I have the cats singing in Latin. Mm-hmm. And... I have some things that I wanted them to sing in Latin that, no, you know, it's like, this is one of those wonderful things. Nobody in the audience is going to know, except for that one person who comes in and had like 6 or 7 years of Latin in college for some ungodly reason. But nobody
listens to that guy anyway. You know right. I mean? What goes with the package of that socially and nobody
actually,
listens
actually,
to
this points to something that actually is that I'm a rabbit hole person. You know, once I get into some idea, that's why the nuclear fusion and fission thing. That's why another play I did was Liquid about the melting earth. And then it's like, you know, I'll just start going. So the Latin thing was, it was a small rabbit hole, but it was a rabbit hole.
For many years, I've wanted to do some kind of play, movie, some story that gets into or the difference between flotsam and jetsam.
You got to do it.
I think the world
will be very relieved. Do you know the difference?
Well, yeah, of course I do. That's
well, tell me because I haven't explored. No, otherwise I'll have to go home and look it up. So, what's the difference between flotsam and jetsam?
I could make it. You would be happy to go home and look it up. You're that. You might get more pleasure.
Take my phone out of my hand now. All right. Now.
So the difference between flotsam and jetsam is that they're both things that were on a ship. right? A boat.
Okay.
And they're now floating in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Flotsam.
Yes.
Was stuff that went overboard when the boat sank. And jetsam is the stuff they threw overboard to prevent the ship from sinking. So literally, a pair of shoes, one shoe can be flotsam and one can be jetsam. And I always remember because...
I feel a song coming on.
You ready to sing it right now? You want to sing it right now?
No, that's fine.
Are you sure? Do you have to?
Flotsam and jetsam? No, I haven't written that song yet, but I will.
Well, you can improvise it and make it up right now.
We'll go on.
We'll go on.
My brain's out of here that
right, well,
yet.
If you go home and write it.
Okay.
Send it over and I'll put it in the episode.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
okay.
We'll just dump it in.
Okay,
yeah.
Got
but,
it.
But yeah, I always remember jetsam sounds like jettison.
Yeah.
And that's the stuff that you throw out, and flotsam is the stuff that just floats away on its own.
Oh.
Yeah. So, Latin.
Flotsam. Poor flotsam. No intention. Jetsam.
I have a question about musical theater.
Da.
Because you are into... writing songs and theatrical things altogether.
Yes.
Is there a thing? Because some people just don't get musical theater. They're not interested or they think they don't like it or whatever.
Yeah.
What is it that a musical theater can do that no other medium really can do? Or just a musical, could be a musical film. But yeah, are there some things that if you use the right tool for the right job that you would say this is a musical story?
This is difficult for me because I make some distinctions about this because I'm not the world's biggest musical theater fan.
Okay.
That's because I kind of find some of the standard musicals, and even the really good musicals, even if I love the music or think about the basic story being good, it's not the biggest transport for me. But I know that it does work in that if you're an audience member, ideally, you're taken into the space. Music allows your brain to drift in a different direction, and it lets you have an emotional journey through the context of not just the character in front of you, but through the music, which for some people is a high.
Right.
Right. Because it allows a different form of expression. I like using it as a commentary. Like I had the scientist, the dead scientist in Reactor. He got to sing, because it was kind of off left field. It wasn't about this being totally a musical, but it allowed a different type of expression and allowed people's consciousness to go in a different direction.
Okay.
And then I have to say, I just directed and put together an evening of Tom Lehrer's music.
Okay, I don't know who that is either.
But. Oh my God! Okay. So this,
you're a nerd about this stuff. You got to realize
something
you don't
know.
Okay. That's why you're on the show.
I know. Okay. So Tom Lehrer. This was just an evening. This was cabaret evening, this was done at Caltech, which I've worked at several times, going down the nerd territory. Yes, I am there. In the cast was Caltech students, staff, and JPL scientists, people who drive the Mars rover, were in my cast.
Okay.
But Tom Lehrer is somebody that a lot of these people know because, Dr. Demento and Weird Al, even Randy Newman, all point to Tom Lehrer.
Here, a suffering is here. Life is Skittles and life is beer. I think the loveliest time of the year is the spring. I do. Don't you? Of course you do. But there's one thing that makes spring complete for me and makes every Sunday a treat for me. All the world seems in tune on a spring afternoon when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. Every Sunday you'll see my sweetheart and me as we poison the pigeons in the park. When they see us coming, the birdies all try and hide, but they still go for peanuts when coated with cyanide. The sun's shining bright, everything seems all right when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. La 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 la.
Because he was in the 50s and 60s, he was the god of musical satire, and he didn't intend to do that. He was a a Harvard graduate. He got his MA in math by the age of 19 at Harvard, and then stayed on for 5 years working on his PhD, which he never got because he was too busy because people found his music and his satire so amazing.
I bet he got beat up a lot in high school and stuff.
No. He was kind of like the god of the kind of like the cool okay. satire sort of poke fun at things in the 50s at Harvard.
All right.
You can find almost all of his songs on YouTube, so you can go and listen to him. Well, but his music had a purpose, which I actually like. So I make a division between the stuff that I would do using it in music and theater. And like I have another piece I'm finishing up right now, which is called A Play in a Restaurant with a Piano and a Bar.
Yes, I heard of that.
Okay, so I've done pieces of it around town. And so music has a purpose in it because it's a play in a restaurant with a piano and a bar. And it's about restaurant with a piano and a bar and a minor god. It's not Dionysus. I guess he's a little bit closer to Bach. Actually, he's a minor god of love who's been stuck at this piano for like the last 100 years.
Okay.
And is going to lose his job if he can't make people fall in love anymore.
Sounds sad.
No,
it sounds like he's sad. Is he depressed? The guy
he's
that's
a little bit,
god
he,
at the piano. So he's like, who's the guy who's lashed to the rock in the eagle comes and eats his liver. Prometheus. Yeah, so he's like a Prometheus love.
Well, he's a Promethean with a sense of hope.
Chained to his piano.
Yeah, he's chained to his piano.
And he plays his heart out every night.
Right, plays his heart out every night.
Because
he still thinks it's going to work. He still thinks that having a piano in a bar is going to make people fall in love. And
so his heart breaks every night and
yes,
back,
and then he grows back inside. That's basically it.
Okay.
It all takes place in one night.
Yeah.
So but for there the music has a purpose. It's about this thing, about this object of music. And that I like.
All right.
And so
we've gained notoriety and caused much anxiety in the Audubon Society with our games. They call it impiety and lack of propriety and quite a variety of unpleasant names. But it's not against any religion to want to dispose of a pigeon. So why don't you come with me and we'll poison the pigeons in the park? And maybe we'll do in a squirrel or two while we're poisoning pigeons in the park. We'll murder them all amid laughter and merriment, except for the few we take home to experiment. My pulse will be quickening with each drop of strychnine we feed to a pigeon. It just takes a smidgen to poison a pigeon in the park.
Something I'll probably talk a little bit more about, but I'm doing the music right now for a Mack Wellman play called The Offending Gesture, which opened in New York last year, and it's the West Coast premiere that I'm doing at Son of Simile. And
who's Mack Wellman?
Oh, Mack Wellman is a sort of not as well-known as you would think absurdist alive playwright who really, in his work, dances around the expectations of theater about how it's put together, and particularly through language. He's not playing on logical, normal story presentations, and so I'll talk a little bit
is
about that.
Is he here in the West Coast, or is he East
No,
Coast
he's in New York. He's in New York.
Because the other guy in New York who does that stuff is Richard Foreman.
Yeah, yeah.
You must be familiar
well,
with Richard,
Richard
Foreman.
Foreman is more like is more in the, I guess, sort of artistic... he's not as funny. I mean, Wellman's funny.
Okay.
Like, quirky, funny, weird, like you don't know why. Sometimes if you're watching, it's funny, but it is.
Okay. All right, I want to do something else.
Okay, go
this
do something
great.
Else.
This is great.
Is
this working for you so far?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm having a good time?
Yeah, I'm having a good time.
All right. Because that's my job, is to make sure that you...
Okay.
One of the other things that you have done that I wanted to get the audience a little information about is a piece called Butoh Meadow.
Did you see it?
I didn't see it. I was reading about it, and I wished that I had been in the know, because I would have been out there with you.
Oh, we want to do another one. Well, so you will be invited.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So for people who don't know, what is Bhutto? Give a like a 30-second
thing. Oh, God. I am not a Bhutto expert, but I just love the form. Bhutto was a theatrical movement, dance, I guess, performance art form that was developed in Japan in reaction to World War II and the atomic bomb, specifically.
Yes.
Because... just the destruction that was inherent and about what that would do to society, what it actually did to people's bodies and what it actually and what terror it held. This is not funny.
No, it's not funny at all.
No, it's not at all.
It's like one of the least funny things out there.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so when you see a performance, you probably have seen pictures, if you reach back in your mind somewhere, when you see somebody all dressed in white and where their skin has been coated with a white powder, which is a representative of what the corpses looked like.
Yeah.
And most of the performances, the art of Bhutto is this extremely slow movement.
Yeah.
And so when you watch it, it's not like your normal dance. It's not normal theater. Your brain has to slow down and absorb this idea of bodies. And a lot of the movement is not pretty ballerina movement. It's awkward. It's distorted.
Painful.
It's, anguish.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's lived on as an art form, and it's not always about that. It's been almost like translated into a way to represent what we're doing in the possibility of living, as opposed to the possibility of death. So the Bhutto Meadow piece was there was an arts festival happening, and so I wanted to create something. I have no idea where this started in my mind, no idea. But I just wanted to kind of like bring this visual aspect and this sort of representation of this sort of like the sensibility into my community. I lived in Silver Lake for the last 20 years. And so I put together a group of people that trained in doing some of the Bhutto movement with a couple of Bhutto experts. And then we kind of constructed this idea about how we wanted to use the Silver Lake Meadow that's at the north end of the lake, the one that was the newer one, and to create something where we would use the meadow as a Bhutto performance. I'll send you the link to the one that's on online.
How many people did it?
22. Took us 2.5 hours to go across the meadow on a Sunday morning with a bass player and a percussionist playing. And so it was this. To do it was probably more fun than to watch, because people who were watching were sort of stumbling upon this event going on in the meadow and not quite sure what it was.
When you move that slowly, the awareness and consciousness totally changes.
Yeah.
Your relationship to being in the world. And that's really the question why I brought this thing up. I'm interested in the value of slowness. At this moment in our world, why go slow? Everybody's going faster.
That was part of the impetus of the piece, is this notion of we're all so indoctrinated into absolute speed. It's like, if you're old enough, you remember when the internet was slow. We're so expecting at this point, like, if you don't get an answer on your Google search in 3 seconds, you're frustrated. And so this need for constant stimulation, and I think we miss so much about life by doing this, like need and having to feed it all the time. So that was part of the impetus for the piece, is to like, how do you actually experience something if you actually slow it down? And I don't think you need to have an atomic bomb to make you realize that, but...
let's hope not.
Hope not.
Let's just say no. Hope not. All right. Well, that was interesting. Yeah, that was. I mean, I'm interested in the slowness of that.
Yeah.
You could do slow things and other stuff. There's slow cooking. I mean, there's all kinds of things.
There's movements for that. I think there's some of the stuff that's happening in music. There's been a move back to. I mean, there still is a whole technology end of music, but there's been a move back to sort of more you know, roots and live and acoustic sounds happening. Yeah. And I think that's some of the reaction to, you just can't, you can't keep that up forever.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah. That's
one of the things I like to do on this show.
Yeah.
Is the anagram stuff, because I find it interesting that.
Have you anagrammed? Go ahead.
Yeah, so when you anagram things, you get other words and phrases that sometimes are illuminating for the topic at hand.
Okay.
So I anagrammed Bhutto Meadow.
Yeah.
And I'm going to show you what I got out of here, and I'm just curious if any of the things that came out ring a bell. Can you read through them just for the
a bowed mouth.
Yeah, so that, what do you get? What do you get from
I can
that?
See the, I can see the sorrow of the mouth bending down at the edges.
Yeah.
It would be there.
I saw an image of some performer with this mouth frozen, or not quite frozen, in a kind of anguished.
Yes,
scream.
Exactly. Well, there's, if you see, there's a slow motion video online. It's on Vimeo.
So a bowed mouth, it just seemed accurate. So, yeah,
yes.
With that.
Beat wood, hum. I think there was something kind of like that going, and we're going to do this again probably this in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
So just having that sort of thumping of the heart and about the beating of the rhythm and
yes.
about the turn and about this sort of sensation of I'm all into this idea about how we create noise with our bodies
and
about slowing that down.
Yes.
So
I thought you would get something out of that.
For
me, I think I went back to like the early days of, you know, beating logs and making noises around the, you know, or primal communication.
Yeah.
And somehow that also fit with the Bhutto Meadow.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, next one.
Meow, thud, boa. I'm not sure of that one. I'm going back to now to my cats and the offending gesture. My brain went there. Sorry. Thud.
I
don't know.
I'm interested where your brain goes. That's basically what this
meow, thud. I'm just thinking about that sort of, again, the stretch of the Bhutto, if I'm going to go with that. But then the idea of, can you fall in Bhutto, was my question.
What do you mean, can you fall?
Can you fall? Or if you fall, you have to do it in slow motion, which a lot of people did as we went across the meadow.
Yeah.
There was a lot of intense slow falling and rolling happening. So, I don't know.
It would be a funny Bhutto thing if somebody's shoelace was untied, one of the performers, and then they tripped and fell in slowest motion, and then other people slowly also, like a bicycle crash, you know?
I'm sure that some versions of those Bhutto-ish things about the slowing down of ordinary life, that's great.
Yeah, that's just, you know, you fall over sometimes. So this one, meow, ... thud, boa. I got a whole story from that.
Oh, my God. Okay, tell me. What's your story?
Well, I mean, it's simple, about a cat being eaten by a snake. It had nothing to do, actually, with Bhutto or Bhutto Meadow. But I was interested that I got a whole scenario from those three words.
I think you should do the animated version.
Meow.
That boa. I think it would get a million hits.
Yeah. Like, it's a guy, now that you say it, it's a guy at his kind of 50s Formica kitchen table, eating a piece of toast, and he hears these things happen, and he looks, and here comes the snake into the room. That's just what I saw.
Good.
Okay, the next one.
Oh, womb, head out. Well, we know what that is.
That's true. Right?
Yes.
I mean, that's the
recommended. Womb, head out.
Yeah,
yeah, that's just
serving suggestion.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
It's there, it comes out.
Yeah.
And it's a birthing metaphor, isn't it?
I think you could even just cut out the metaphor. It's birth. It's birth. But
because
it was
good.
A womb, and head out, which is the way you're supposed to do it.
And it's slow.
And it's slow, and it's
painful. Have you had a baby?
I haven't had a baby,
but I have been
born.
You have been born? Well, yes. Do you remember it?
Not as far as I know.
Oh, okay. Just curious. Wouldn't it be cool if you had that memory? Just like that really super slow memory of this kind of like experience of going, when am I going to breathe? Oh, my God. Oh,
maybe,
I still have an umbilical cord. Yes.
Maybe this is the sign. You know how, like, if you're in the movie theater, it says exit red, and you're like, so you know where to go. Inside the womb, when it's time,
there is a little
it
poster.
Says womb, head out, and it starts to
It lights up.
It lights up when it's time
Does
to
it
be
flash,
born.
Or does it just go on and stay on?
Well, probably flashes. There are these contractions.
Right,
you know what
the collage.
Faster and faster.
Yeah.
Just like, baby, you know, head, just a reminder, head out.
Head out.
A lot of stuff going on now.
Don't stay in, head out.
Yeah, head out.
Yeah.
So. And the last one.
Ow! A thumb ode.
Okay, now this one.
Ow. It's an ode to the thumb, I guess.
Yeah. How? Yeah.
I'm getting a performance art person in my head. Speaking of the power of the thumb, right. The thumb is upright. The thumb can go down.
Yeah.
The thumb can turn.
Yeah.
The thumb tells us the purpose of the moment.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. That's the second act. So here's how this one begins now. I'm sorry.
Okay, got it. How can we put this all together?
No, the ow, a thumb ode. Actually, I'm seeing this one in the Richard Foreman Theater just because that's where my mind went.
You went back to Foreman.
My mind went there. It's just what we know, you know, reference points. Anyway, the audience arrives. There's a delay in the beginning. The theater manager gets on the intercom and says they're having some technical difficulties with the set or something and that they'll begin shortly and just be patient.
Yeah.
And the workman or woman comes out to start to fix something and hits their thumb, you know, while hammering.
Yes.
And there's a kind of a commotion, and because of that, they start to sing. Ow!
Oh.
You know, ow. And then, so you think, it hasn't begun, but it has begun.
But I've done that a few times with shows. Did I ever tell you about Fable du Théâtre?
Not yet, but there's time.
Okay, like right, just start short. It's just at the play I did at Unknown Theater. And everything from the moment the audience arrived on the street to when they got to the show, what you'd think the show started, everything was staged. From the moment you got into the theater, right. There was actors drunk at the bar. Got there it. Was this whole thing. There was a fake theater company that collaborated. So I love creating those types of things.
That's good. Those are good.
It partially
punctures the envelope of the theatrical event.
Yeah.
Right? When it begins before you realize that it begins.
Yep.
Or it ends in a way, or you break the fourth wall. It's not so safe.
No. And it's a big difference, yeah. Because I'm kind of fond of that at this point. So that's.
It reminds me, there's some surrealists, you know, back in the day, and they had some performance in Paris where, you know, as the people were entering the theater, they had to kind of walk down this ramp, and the performers were under the ramp masturbating, you know, as people came in, and people didn't even know. But that was part of, for them, that was part of the...
A subconscious experience, maybe?
Maybe.
Or just not, just don't know at all. It's just for the performers could change their relationship to the audience because they had already whacked off in front of them. Okay, underneath them. That's good. That's good.
I personally just, if anybody's listening at home, I don't need people walking over me.
Right. No? Okay, that's not something you want to do as a performer?
I'm just saying it's not necessary. And I'm not even talking about performing.
Okay, thank you.
How old were you when you first ran away from home?
Technically,
how old or technically ran away?
Technically ran away.
I see.
Well, I suppose that the first one would be escaping at the cabin. Escaping at the cabin.
And how old were you then?
Probably seven, I think.
And what were you escaping, or home, or what?
I don't think I've ever necessarily been thought of escaping from. It's been more escaping to.
Okay.
So I don't know if that still is defined as escaping.
Well, yes.
There's always limitations on the boundaries of what you're supposed to do, right?
Sure.
So I think even when I was seven, I just was not interested in what the boundaries were, so I always wanted to go beyond the boundaries. So escaping to go around the lake, which we weren't supposed to do, right. Was probably a really good thing to do.
So it sounds like it wasn't about the lake, it was about the rule.
About the rules. It's always about the breaking the rules. Sorry. Please don't listen to this.
Kids, don't try this at home.
Don't.
Or do try this at home.
Please. No. I'm sure many people have escaping from stories,
sure.
You know, getting away from, but it was always a question of what I could find. I was a sci-fi kid.
Yeah.
I mean, like literally from like age four in the science fiction section of the library, just pulling books off the shelf. So that's...
And what do you remember reading as a young person?
Every single Asimov and Bradbury.
Yeah.
And Zelazny and Delaney.
All right, those are all great places to start. You got it.
So that's where my brain's formed, yeah. So don't ask.
No, those guys are all really great.
Yeah.
As a child, you had an imaginary friend.
Mm-hmm.
Your imaginary friend also had an imaginary friend.
Oh.
Where are they now?
Oh, that's kind of a fun one. Okay.
You got something because you're laughing.
Yeah, I'm going, no, I don't. No. It goes back to the sci-fi stuff. Because, you know, if you start out sci-fying early enough, then, you know, your friends were people on other planets. And that's, you know, I can think of stories that I created in my head about the people that I knew that were living on another planet. Maybe one of those seven planets that just popped up from NASA.
Let's focus. Pick the character from your early science fiction thing that you invented. You created these?
Yeah.
So pick somebody that you might know where they are now. It's just one of those people, one of those characters.
One of those people. Oh, yeah. My God.
Whichever one comes, floats to the top first.
It's actually something I created in something later on. So I would be creating Zort.
Zort.
Zort, yeah. Zort. Zort. Zort.
Male, female, or
androgynous. Non-determinant.
A non-determinant gender.
How do you know it's an alien? You know, that's, yeah. You know, so
and they may not have gender where they come from.
That's what I mean. That's exactly. That's,
so Zort was, tell us anything about Zort at the time.
Oh, my God.
When it was in a
drifting
story.
Way back. In my, Zort came to visit Earth. Uh-huh. Yes.
And on purpose or by accident?
I got sent here as punishment.
Well, yeah, just like tourist, refugee, penal colony.
Colony.
Those are basically the three ways you can arrive. So Zort arrived as kind of a...
Had broken some rules. We are Australia. We are not. Yeah.
Well, see, that's an interesting idea that we are the Australia for the rest of the universe, and they send all their assholes to us. We just don't know.
That's actually I've developed that way to the other side of the into a long, much longer piece.
That we are Australia.
Yeah, we are Australia.
I'm going to write it down because it fits with something else I'm working on about an alien comic, stand-up comic, who's a stand-up comic in other parts of the universe and then comes to Earth.
We have similar thoughts about the aliens coming here, but yeah, when I was a kid, I probably didn't think about it as being so much. But if Zort was still around, Zort became an Earther and decided
like he went native,
totally.
And he decided that Earth was better than where it was from?
For him.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's not cast anyway. So being an Earther was a choice.
Outcast, like literally out.
Well, he got sent here sort of like for punishment, but then decided to stay. So my idea is that there's probably thousands of Earthers, you know, that are disguised as humans or hanging out here.
Well, that's the story of the Silver Surfer comic book too, right?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't read that. No.
That was a Marvel guy, and
that one I missed.
Anyway, whatever. Doesn't matter.
There's always aliens. There's still aliens on this planet. That's all I care about. That gives me hope.
They're here. do you still have your band, the Cosmic Rangers?
That's the name I use when I'm doing stuff.
So the answer is yes.
Yes, the Cosmic Rangers. I'm actually kind of like putting together a couple of shows for the spring, so I don't have exact dates and locations, but I'm trying to put together this sort of idea again. Cosmic Rangers was just a name, of course, I would love.
Okay.
That's all.
You like it? And so, but the who's in the Cosmic Rangers can change all the time.
Yeah, they can change. Right?
I mean,
it's musicians that are available. I'm there.
You're
I'm
there
on the piano.
The
yeah, that's right.
Okay. Well, I also anagrammed the Cosmic Rangers because I liked it. I thought it was awesome. And here are some things that can say, and you know, again.
Ooh, I'm just going to read these kind of quickly. Scratchier gnomes, something scarcer. Mm-hmm. Recreating schmoes.
Schmoes. Recreating schmoes.
Schmoes. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yiddish.
Screaming torches.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I would not have even thought that possible.
It's a good name for a band, Screaming Torches.
Yeah. That's a great. Orgasmic Trenches. Another awesome name for a band.
I think that's actually an album name.
It is?
See, Screaming Torches sounds like a band, but Orgasmic Trenches sounds
like the name of the album.
To me.
And A Screeching Storm. That sounds like it's a story. A screeching storm. Once she stepped out of the house, she saw the storm coming, and she knew that she must hide. I don't know. I like Scratchier and Gnomes, though, the first one. I have no idea what Scratchier and Gnomes are, but...
They need a shave.
Yeah.
Scratchier and Gnomes, they need a shave, and they did not take their spurs off before they came in the house.
Right. And there's not seven of them, there's 16.
Something scarcer, I was like, it's like the seldom seen.
Right.
But not quite as...
But it's pretty, though. Yeah. Something scarcer, I don't know what that... Maybe the name of a song. Something scarcer.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
I kind of liked recreating schmoes, because it...
What does that mean?
Well,
tell me.
Schmo is
schmo.
Like any,
I know,
schmo
right.
Is any
right,
idiot. But then I said, recreating schmo, what could that... That's like a cover band.
Oh, it could be, yes.
They're not top musicians.
And the songs they would do then would be sort of like covers of things that were the B-sides.
B-sides.
They're definitely B-sides. They're not the A-side.
Schmoes,
yes. Things that never made it into the top 100.
But the winners here are Screaming Torches and
Orgasmic Trenches.
Right? What would be the Orgasmic Marianas Trench? Because... Orgasms have peaks and valleys.
Did you hear about the Marianas Trench?
It's full of crap. It's full of dirt.
And plastic.
Plastic.
Oh, okay, sorry. You know that. Of course, you know that.
The cans.
And it's like the little weird little things that live on the bottom are full of crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The deepest
it's so sad,
place we can find in the ocean.
Because we're a brilliant species. We know how to take care of this planet, baby.
Has takeout food waste at the deepest part of the planet. Yeah, that's us.
That's one of my fantasy projects.
That's us. Yeah. All right, so we got some good stuff out of that. Oh, gosh. We're running out of time. We're having too much fun.
Okay, we're having too much fun. Okay. Songs, life. Distance. Oh, I want to say something about just the Lair stuff. Lair, if you, because he's a funny.
Lair.
Because the reason why we might do the show again, in the fringe.
This show?
Yeah, the way A Wasted Evening with Tom Lair.
Oh, I thought you said you were going to do our show, the show we're doing right now.
Well, right now, we should do this again in the fringe. We're just going to sit there, and, we can bring you in, and you can have different people every night, and you could be at the fringe.
I think it would be compelling.
Yeah, I think it would be compelling.
I'm compelled.
And just have a room full of people, a very small room,
and
they have to sit really close. Like uncomfortably close, and they have to listen. It'd be like a Butoh, radio experience.
Dinner table theater.
Dinner table theater.
You have dinner with a bunch of people, some people are in the cast and some people aren't.
I would love it.
That's been done. You were going to say something about Tom Lair.
Oh, no. The Tom Lair stuff. I mean, just speaking about the other stuff that I do, about the music stuff and the satire stuff, was that Lair... was sort of like this god of stuff. And when we originally proposed doing this show, it was almost like a year ago. And so his songs, which are things like We Will All Go Together When We Go and National Brotherhood Week and let's see what else we go, Pollution, all these songs, they were funny a year ago. Mm-hmm. They were retro. Mm-hmm. And then as the year went on and as we started preparing to actually do the show, they became current event songs again. And it was the weirdest. It was probably one of the more disturbing experiences I've had because there was like we were going through part of it. I went, okay, Pollution's back. Okay, National Brotherhood Week is because that song starts out. Oh, the white folks hate the black folks, and the black folks hate the white folks. That's the first line, and it goes the whole song's about who hates who, and so it's very funny.
This
is hilarious. But I was like, we're getting to do the show, and I'm going. At least all the nuclear bomb songs, at least those will not be relevant. And then December happened. And then all of a sudden, it was not funny to say, we will all go together when we go again. It was like, oh, my God. And those are, the songs. One of the songs that I wrote in the last year was basically called I Thought By Now. And it's like... this delusion of being a human being in a lifetime. You go, by the time I'm X age, it'll all be groovy and cool, and we'll have figured this out. And then I went, oh, that's right. That's just not going to happen ever.
That's not going to happen.
So that's not funny, but it's true. Go ahead.
Here's another question.
I got a question.
You have a somewhat quirky sleeping or bedtime ritual. What is it?
Several. Well, the ritual now. Okay.
Just tell us the one you least want to admit to people.
Okay. The least one I want to admit to people. Oh no, it's not like that. It's not that quirky. I have a TV ritual, which I've been trying to break desperately, which is to watch really bad television before I go to bed, which just means like standard broadcast TV dramas. And usually I think they're going to put, and actually, I shouldn't say it's bad because they'll come after me. The TV police will be at my door knocking.
Probably.
And saying, you have told us that this is the wrong show to watch.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're going to, I'm going to edit out the fake news that you say.
Okay. So they're at my door right now.
Yeah, good thing you're not there.
But I have found that that's the most narcoleptic thing that I can do is to watch the standard TV dramas. But so, once in a while I get involved, though. So the one that I've gotten kind of involved with, and I don't understand why, is that I've gotten sort of attached to Blue Bloods.
Blue Bloods.
Yes. And it's like I can't even really tell you anything about it, why. It's just that, you know, it's like sort of this police drama. I don't like police dramas. But so I can't get, like, you know, I can't, like, go to bed until if I start one of them, I can't go until I finish.
So does it put you to sleep or it keeps you awake? I'm confused.
Actually, it puts me in sort of a narcoleptic dream state. Is that a phrase that one can use? No,
I think
that's bad.
Is that bad? No, I think the latest research says that if you get a bunch of electronic stimulation from a computer or a television or anything like that.
Oh, I know. It's terrible.
Sleep, it's horrible.
Okay. Yeah, so I've been trying to counteract it with another electronic ritual. Is that bad?
Probably.
So I've been trying to back off the TV stuff. I can't turn on. I was for a while there. I was trying. Well, I'll watch the news before I go to bed.
That's just bad.
Right. So there's the other options are to play the piano, mm-hmm. Which is kind of a relatively healthy one, though it can
you do
that
a lot,
can
so.
That, but then I can that can get into like 2 or 3 hours, which is bad.
Yeah.
But the thing is, there's an app you can get for your phone that's called Calm. And it there's one of the versions. It just replicates a nice little forest in the background, and then there's a thing you can add onto it that makes you breathe in a regular cycle.
A little white noise.
Yeah, it goes, ping.
So you want to time with
ping.
The breaths.
Yeah, and then that's one way.
So you got so much calmer just telling me about the thing that you don't even use.
I'm trying to use it more, and I'll slow my voice down to.
It's working.
I don't get there.
It's working.
Yes.
That's as weird and quirky as you get it at bedtime?
I don't know. I think you know, I'm relatively I'm relatively boring on most on those life ritual things.
Okay. All right. So
I'm kind of, you know, I wish I had quirkier ones.
All right, here's my second to last question.
Second to last, okay.
I have this thing that you don't know about, but over 20 years ago, I told a bunch of people, family and friends,
right,
that it was always okay to hit me in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer.
Yeah, I understand that.
And I wanted to take this thing that was usually forbidden and mm-hmm. done with aggression, and I wanted to give people permission, and so that they could throw the pie with love and generosity, and I could receive this pie with love and generosity. And it's been a really lot of fun, and it's totally changed what getting a pie in the face is about.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my question. You're going to do this. You're going to accept a pie in the face with love and generosity from someone. And I'm going to say you get to pick the person who throws the pie. And who would you like to have hit you in the face with a pie? It can be anyone, living or dead, real, imaginary. Sky's the limit. Who would you like to have hit you in the face with a pie?
Wow. Oh. I just, my brain went to like too many places at once. Let's see. Who would I want to be the pie?
What came up first? What comes up first?
When you first went to the circle of family, you know, which family member would you go? Then you go to which friend level would you go? Then you go to which famous person would you go? You know, I would let my son throw a pie at me. It would probably be the first one, just so that he could say, I did it. And that would, you know, destroy the sort of idea of what parent-child. But I think we've already destroyed that anyway.
Okay.
So that's that.
Should be like
catharsis. Yeah, ritualistic coming-of-age catharsis. That would be good.
Leveling the playing field between you and a child.
Well, you know, and so, you know, and going back to the Lair thing, I would let Tom Lair throw a pie in my face. And it was great, as I did get to email him a few times during this, so I got replies from, that was kind of like one of those, you know, like those God things, you know? So you kind of like would let one of the people that you think is, you know, one of your comedy gods or one of your writing gods, they could throw a pie in your face. That would be kind of fun.
And so for you, Tom Lehrer is
it? Well, one of them. Yeah, that would be one of them.
Anybody else comes to mind?
Let's see. Living
like, if
dead,
you got to work really hard at this, that those are not the right answers.
No, they're not right. They're not right either. I think I'm going to stay with that one for now. Because I could put, you know, like Randy Newman on the list, too. Okay. But that would be, you know, that's one of my... Yeah, now, if I'd Lair and Newman were like early influences in about how I was thinking.
Now, Randy Newman also has a kind of reputation of being curmudgeonly.
Oh, and yeah.
What about Tom Lehrer? Is he, these funny people who, when you meet them in person, are kind of jerky. Tom Lehrer, is he like that also?
He's reclusive. Uh-huh. And sort of, he's very funny if he's on stage, but if he goes off, he's very protected and very...
Yeah.
That's, yeah. So that's, and I actually wrote a song about Newman. About his curmudgeonliness.
It's just an interesting thing.
Yeah.
It's not even news that people who are funny have problem with people.
Yes.
A lot of times.
What are you saying?
just noticing.
Just saying.
Just noticing.
Oh, I talk a lot, but it's like that sort of that line between... between being an actual extrovert and being an introvert. And so... I can talk, but I'm really not an extrovert. Because if you give me 2 minutes to escape, I probably will escape.
Now, we're kind of out of time.
Oh, my God.
You have to go.
I have to leave you?
You have to go. Don't you have some other places to go?
Yes, I do. I have rehearsals.
Yeah, and so we had planned for you to play a song, sing a song.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any songs about toast?
I don't yet.
Toast.
About what?
Toast.
Just regular old toast.
Yeah.
Let me think. Do I have toast in any of my songs?
I'm going to take this as a no. You don't really
know. No. I was trying to think if the word toast was in it. How about any other words that you were interested
in? That just popped up, and I realized the other day I was starting to write a song about toast. Dude, like a jazzy, bluesy thing.
The one I'm working on right now, which I'm sure other people are working on too, but and I think I got it going a little bit, is Mar-a-Lago. Because that I just love that word.
Mar-a-Lago. I see Barry Manilow.
Yes, exactly.
Right? That's where we're going.
See?
That means you're in there.
My body starts dancing the moment they say that.
If I have one request.
You have a request.
I would like a song about Ow, a thumb ode.
Oh, okay.
That's just a request. But,
okay.
You know.
We can do that.
Well, maybe. Last thing, what's coming up next? Anything to plug, promote, announce? Where can we see you, hear you?
Okay, the first one is Offending Gesture, which is I'm doing the music for it, but that's and musical direction. That's at Son of Semele. That opens in March, I believe it's... I always forget the date exactly. March 10th, I think. And then I'm working on... let's see, the next thing that comes up after that. I'm working with the Steven Sisters, which are, they were a Cirque aerialists, twin sisters.
Okay.
They're pretty famous as far as, and we're developing a show. So I'm writing the music for the Steven Sisters and their show. And then I'm working on my show, which is the Cosmic Rangers and Brenda Varda and a whole set of new songs.
Okay, so March for sure. The other things, a little longer. Steven Sisters, aerialists.
Steven, S-T-E-B-E-N.
B.
If you go online, you see them. They do incredibly dangerous stuff in the air, but they also have this great, amazing story. They're mirror twins, which is kind of a version of identical twins, but it's a slightly different point of separation in the cells, so that they're literally exact opposites.
So more than twins, they're exact opposites.
Well, they're identical twins, except the identical twins will often have the same right hand. They'll both be right-handed.
Ah.
So they're one of them's very right brain, one's very left brain, one's right-handed, right. One's left-handed.
Yeah.
One is more, you know, less cognitively oriented. One's more the facts. One's not safe. One's safe.
And so they're kind of like a whole person that was split in half.
Yeah.
Not Yeah, that's weird.
And it's a different. You can go online. You can read about it. It's like a different point in the separation of the cell, which
interesting.
So it's a small, much smaller percentage.
Of, interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
But so that's what the show's about. Is about the, I'm helping them write. Is about what is it to be one person in two halves and to reconcile that and be with them. Right. So,
well, I would like to thank my guest, the ever popular Brenda Varda.
Yeah.
For coming in this week. If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug. You can email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. They're a little expensive. They're like close to $20 with the shipping and everything, and because I have to get them made.
But
privately.
It's very nice.
Well, yeah. So far, no one has called in.
No I was going to ask you that.
No one. No
the
one.
Thousands of these you have sold?
No, zero.
Zero.
I've given
Is
a couple
there a t-shirt?
Away. There's not a t-shirt.
Oh, okay.
There's a breakfast cereal and a coffee mug. A t-shirt comes later.
Oh, well, you know, I don't do
After
samples.
The movie.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Then
got it.
You
okay,
get the t-shirt.
Got it.
That's how I was advised. The t-shirt and the action figure.
And the breakfast cereal?
Breakfast cereal, you can seed that early with the mug, and then the movie comes in the middle, and then the t-shirt action figures are post-film.
Right.
That's just what I
Then you can
I've
be greenlit,
advised.
Yeah.
I've been
if
advised.
You can,
yeah. Dylan Vigil. Do you know Dylan?
No.
Nice guy. He's our producer and engineer.
Oh.
Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. Also a nice guy. You would like him. He's a pianist. Anyway, I'll tell you that later. You've been listening to Actors Comedy Studio. I'm going to try that again. You've been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. I always have to read that part.
I know.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.